You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got a
knife. Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 76 for the 19th of February, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by... Oh, who? Who's here? Oh, Richard, you're here, aren't you?
I'm Josh Philpott. No, I'm not.
Richard Gray, how are you?
I'm not Josh Philpott.
We lost Josh.
I'm otherwise well, but we've lost Josh.
We seem to have lost Josh in the wilds of New Zealand at the moment. I send him emails and it takes like 3 days to reply.
You know there's only one computer in New Zealand.
It seems that way.
You've all got to share it, eh?
So Josh will be back with us again next week, I hope. I think there's only one plane that goes in and out of New Zealand as well.
It's a rowboat. Goes across the Tasman, yeah.
We will have him back next week. But Richard, you and I are still here, and we will continue through.
Oh, yeah. Look, in spirit. In spirit. Memory. In loving memory of Josh.
All right. So, Richard, what have we got on the show this week? We got a review of the new Liam Neeson film, The Grey, which I think we're going to have an interesting discussion about this film, even without Josh, because... I think we may have differing opinions on this film. I'm not sure. I'm not sure at this point. We'll come back to that. But we also have, of course, what we've been watching. We have some information on a competition that's going to be running, but with another podcast. We'll come back to that in a minute. And, of course, we have a brand new list of five coming up, which is, now, how did we word this? It was...
Our favorite movie body parts, I think.
Five, no, it wasn't favorite.
Or five movie body parts.
Five great movie body parts body or something parts like that. Anyway, we'll have the wording properly set in place by the time we actually do the show notes. But in inspiration of, and this is where I have to apologize, because the reason this list came about was because we were also going to talk about Shame.
I can talk about Shame if you want.
And you will talk about Shame, but I just couldn't get to it.
Even though I have none.
Oh dear. Anyway, so I didn't get to Shame, which I am very ashamed of.
It would be a shame to miss it.
We will do our best to have a little discussion about this over the next, probably next week, because I do still want to talk about it, because I still am going to go see it. But you can talk about it a little bit this week, which will help at least justify this list.
Why not?
All right. So, first of all, though, let's get into a What We've Been Watching segment. So, I know that one of the big films that you saw this week you can't talk about, so just forget that one. We'll come back
to it. In fact, there were two films I saw this week that I can't talk about.
Are you joking?
Yeah, no. The other one I saw was 21 Jump Street.
Oh, okay. And you can't talk about that either.
Yeah, like I say, I saw 21 Jump Street and John Carter. Can't say anything more on either of those. I've just jumped the gun there. But do you want me to talk about the other ones?
Yes, please do.
I can't remember whether it was my turn or yours.
No, please go for it.
Look, Josh isn't here and it's already gone to hell. Because there's an order to these things. It's Josh, it's me, and then you do your watching.
I know, Josh is just not here. Although, I think we do have a bit of a Josh's Bargain Basement we can listen to. I believe this is it here.
Yeah. Welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Give us all your money.
Hey, that's not very nice.
Looks short, but to the point. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. That was a great pick this week. See, he needs the money to go out and buy more Bargain Basement films.
Well, yeah. He's been burning through his pocketbook. One of the other films I saw this week as well, I still can't talk about because we're going to be talking about it probably next week, which is Contraband.
Oh, of course, yes.
But I will mention briefly that... what a mess.
I think I summed it up by saying that it felt like they had all the right ingredients but didn't know how to mix them, and you said?
And I said that I said a couple of different things. One of the things I said was it was contraband.
No, it was about the ingredients thing, though, which I love, where you actually said to me, you said, no, it's like they had all the ingredients, dropped them on the floor.
Yeah, it's kind of like they had all the ingredients and they were making a recipe and they dropped the pot and then thought, oh... Let's just all put it back in, and it still kind of looks like a cake.
That's right. They just shoved all the ingredients back in. See what happens.
It's kind of like it's another remake of another Nordic film. When they've in there smuggling it over the border, I think the condom holding the script broke.
We will go into more detail next week. So needless to say that neither of us were particularly impressed. So
I don't know about you. I loved it. No, it's terrible.
Oh, dearie me. This show's going to hell in a handbasket already. Josh, come back. We need you. You got anything else?
Yeah, look, I saw a couple of different films. One of them I mentioned, two of them I mentioned quickly. There's a Chinese film coming out this week in Australia called Love, which is a little bit like one of those kind of hyperlinked romance films where everything, you know, there's a bunch of different stories going on and they all connect somehow, like kind of like the Valentine's Day or you know, New Year's Eve type films. But this one's actually good.
Right.
It's got this wonderful 12-minute opening sequence that looks like it's done in one shot.
Really?
Which was pretty amazing. Another film I saw today was a bit of a guilty pleasure called One for the Money. This kind of snuck its way into cinemas.
Oh, I actually wanted to see this one.
Yeah, look, it snuck its way into Australian cinemas, but it's based on the Janet Ivanovich book. And this has got Katherine Heigl in it, with dark curly hair rather than her typical blonde locks, and suits her quite well.
Well, she looks a lot like Sandra Bullock on the poster. It looks like it looks like the poster from Miss Congeniality 3.
Yeah, it's not quite the best. It's actually got a really good sense of humor to it. It's got a lot of fun. It's poking sort of fun at that whole New Jersey kind of lifestyle, and she's a real a really different character what she normally plays, and I quite liked her. Also, she's naked in the shower for a huge sequence, handcuffed.
I'm right there. So,
yeah. So for that reason alone, you should go and see it.
Speaking of that, we're doing body parts in our list of five. Did I tell you that?
I might need to change that list after seeing Katherine Heigl's breasts there.
Oh man, you're making me want to go see this movie now. Alright, no, that's terrible. I'm so sexist.
We shouldn't objectify women, even though men are pre-programmed to stare at breasts.
I would like, and I gotta share this with you right now. I know we don't do the Geek Actually Show, and this is such Geek Actually fodder. It really is. But did you see there was a study out of Germany this week?
Yeah.
That actually said that staring at women's breasts is actually good for men.
Exactly. Someone told me, I think my lovely girlfriend Susan mentioned this earlier.
It's brilliant. It's actually a study. They studied 500 men over the course of several years, and they actually found that those who stared at women's breasts, like, you know, just on the street and so forth, for 10 minutes a day, it was the equivalent of a 30-minute workout.
My God, I'm working out like 7 hours a day.
Me too. I know. Apparently, men who stare at women's breasts, and all you women out there who have your cleavages and everything hanging out, you are doing men a favor. All right? So just be aware that you can actually be extending our lives by 5 to 10 years.
Can I just say, women who have cleavage, we salute you.
Absolutely. So I thought that was just a wonderful study, and it has nothing to do with movies whatsoever. Except that there are an awful lot of breasts in movies.
Lucky.
What was that?
Well, more appropriately.
Gosh, really got some nice toys here.
Oh, you've been capping.
I've been capping.
You've been capping. All right, what have I been watching? Look, mostly television again this week. I've been trying to catch up with my TV because there's a lot of TV shows out there. But I think it is appropriate to say that I did actually watch the season return of The Walking Dead, which is its big season, mid-season return. Now, the reports are coming out, and I don't have this in writing, but the reports are coming out that this is actually one of the highest rated dramas. That episode is one of the highest rated dramas of all time on television.
Wow.
It is unbelievable how successful this episode has been. Whether it deserves that or not, that is a whole different issue. It's still suffering basically from the Walking Dead, you know, let's go walk through the bushes for five episodes problem that it's been suffering from. But the last scene of the cliffhanger for the season break was such a doozy, it obviously brought everybody back.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that it's such a high-rated show in the US, and it's not until this week in Australia that we are getting the first episode of the first season for the first time.
Unbelievable. It is unbelievable how long it has taken to get out here. Anyway,
they have to launch a whole new channel on Foxtel just to get this thing happening.
And what I love is it's not even the right channel.
No,
they're launching the FX channel and they're putting AMC shows on it.
We don't have an AMC channel out here, but no.
Anyway,
even so, and we're getting it in Hell on Wheels, which has sort of got here twice as fast, despite the fact that it's in a covered wagon.
I also watched Big Bang Theory, which continues to be a very funny show. I still like that show a lot.
I've been watching The New Girl.
I like that.
Been catching up on that. I'm slowly warming to it.
I like it. I like the I like the boys more than I like her.
I do. I'm actually, as much as I love Zoe, and I really love Zoe. Let me get this. I'm right there with you, man.
I love her.
I want to be friends with her.
Oh, I don't. That's terrible,
David. I'm being polite. but she, you know, as much as it, I'm sort of sick of the fact that she, like, it's any excuse for her to sing now.
Look, and I think she's actually taken dits to almost irritable levels.
Yeah, yeah.
But the three guys cast against her are actually really funny, and their interplay is really funny, and I really like watching them. So, you know, I've been watching New Girl since it debuted, and I actually quite like it a lot. The other new show that I really like, I've talked about this a couple of times, but I push to keep this show going because it is a good show, which is Suburgatory.
That's right. We spoke about that a few weeks ago.
We did, because she's just been cast in Evil Dead.
That's right.
And she's really wonderful, and Suburgatory is a lot of fun.
Which is pushing on ahead, apparently, the Evil Dead film.
Oh, well, that's good to hear, I guess. Mm. I don't know. I'm still not sold on a remake of the Evil Dead.
Bruce Campbell's given it his blessing.
Yeah, I know. They can all give their blessings, but the fact that it's actually written by Diablo Cody. It's actually not written by her. The original reports were she was rewriting a script.
She's probably Whedonizing it.
Probably. She's Diabloing it.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. She's come in just to do the dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. And she's probably added a lot of, you know, Valley speak and stuff into it, and, you know.
Totally.
Anyway, so
Tag
me with a spoon. I'm N. Clay Wiener. So, you know. listen to the news show if you want to know more about Clay Wiener.
Wieners, yeah. On this show, it's just penises and vaginas.
That's right. We don't have Clay Wieners here. No. All right.
More on that later.
More on that later. But I do want to stress here that in watching Walking Dead, we do actually do another podcast called Behind the Panels, which is a comic book podcast, which we like to push. But we should really push it this week because you've managed to secure us some Blu-ray copies of Season 1 of The Walking Dead, and we're giving them away on Behind the Panels.
That's right. Thanks to Hopscotch Entertainment, we've got four copies of The Walking Dead Season 1 on Blu-ray to give away to our lucky listeners. So what we want you to do is download the latest Behind the Panels from either geekactually.com or therealbits.com, or head up iTunes where you can find it as well. Listen to that episode in its entirety because we know you're going to love it. Somewhere in there is a question to enter the competition. Once you've listened to that question, head on over to my site, therealbits.com, fill out the form that you'll find there on the featured competition section, and you could win yourself a copy.
Absolutely. So do that. Do that now, because you can get yourself a copy of the Blu-ray of The Walking Dead Season 1, which is a great thing.
And finish listening to this podcast first.
No, just go now.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about films and stuff.
Yeah, it's all that. We're going to talk about penises and vaginas later, so, you know.
We've got nothing to give away on this show.
I could probably find something to give away. I got things around my office.
I've got like a pencil here. I've got an IKEA pencil. Tell you what, if someone wants to win an IKEA pencil...
Write to Richard.
What's the email address that they can send something to?
I don't know. Tweet it to @DVDBits.
Tweet me. Go to Twitter. Tweet me @DVDBits saying, I want the IKEA pencil. You have to live in Australia because I'm not posting this overseas. But if you tweet me saying that you want the IKEA pencil and why, @DVDBits on Twitter, I will give this away to you.
Now, the question is there like a, because you may get 15 tweets. Is it the first one?
It's look, I'm going to make this whoever makes me laugh. Whoever gives me the best reason.
Okay, and this is not an official competition. The rules are simple. Our decision is final.
This is just me being silly. So there are no terms and conditions. And our word is bond on this one.
Absolutely.
And if you want your own IKEA pencil, they give them out for free at IKEA.
But not everybody lives close to an IKEA, so, you know.
No, I certainly don't. I worked hard to get that IKEA pencil.
See, I live close to IKEA.
Giving away lightly.
See, I'm not going to enter because I live like a couple of blocks down the road from IKEA.
That's right. I have to travel all the way to Rode just to go to IKEA.
All right. Let's get on with this film review because I want to talk about this. So this week we are reviewing The Gray, which is directed by Joe Carnahan and written by Ian McKenzie Jeffers and, oh God, who else is this written by? I hate it when they do that, when they separate the credits up on me. All right, hold on a second. Based on a short story. Okay, so it's based on a short story, Ghostwalker, right, by himself, Ian McKenzie Jeffers. The film stars Liam Neeson. There's a bunch of people I didn't know, but Dermot Mulroney is in there. And
almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, I thought so too. I don't think anybody else in the cast was really that famous, but there's Dallas Roberts and Frank Grillo and Nonzo. And oh, what a name. Nonzo Anozie. Great name. He who plays Burke. Joe Anderson, Ben Bray, etc., etc., etc. So there's a bunch of people who you probably have never seen before, and there's people who you may have seen in other things, but you just didn't know who their names were. None of these names, except for Liam Neeson and Dermot Mulroney, was I familiar with.
And some wolves.
And a bunch of big-ass wolves. And we're saying big-ass wolves. They were huge. Mm. All right, so we got a trailer. Let's have a look at this trailer, and then we'll come back and talk about this.
Let's do it.
A job at the end of the world. There's not a second goes by when I'm not thinking of you.
Going home, guys.
Going on. Somebody will find us.
Nobody's gonna find us. Not here. We figure out one way is south and we start walking.
This will be one of those wild stories you tell at a party.
What is that?
Don't move. Stare right back at him. If we can get to that tree line, we can better defend ourselves.
Go! Go!
You gotta be kidding me.
We could climb down.
Grab him!
I want to see your face. Feel your hands and mine.
The Gray, rated R, starts January 27th.
The Gray, rated R.
Starts January. Actually, no, it didn't start January 27th. It started much later here in Australia.
In fact, started this week.
It started February 23rd. February 16th.
16th. Thank you. I was about to say.
I didn't even know.
You were time traveling again, weren't you?
It's all wibbly wobbly timey wimey bits, David.
All right. So, Richard, I'm going to let you go first because I really want to hear what you had to say about this. Tell me what you thought of The Gray.
Look, I'd heard so much about this before I went into it, and I was expecting all sorts of things, because this is Joe Carnahan, after all.
I just want to explain, if anybody can hear this in the background, we are in the middle of a storm, and it's just started pouring rain outside. So if it sounds like I'm underwater here, it's because I probably am.
I've closed my blinds in front of me because I'm right near a window and all I can see is strobe lighting out front.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Sorry. I'm making my own storm here. Just so the people feel as though there is part of the storm as well while I'm talking. So basically what's happened is while the storm's raging in the background. Yeah, I'd heard a lot about this film because it's Joe Carnahan, but you don't typically expect quality films to come out of Joe Carnahan. You expect big action films that are dumb, but they do their job fairly nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Carnahan is, after all, a person whose debut feature was called Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane, and his career to date has pretty much been described in the same way.
Oh, this is the man who made Smoking Aces and the A-Team, you know, and Ticker and Narc. And
I mean, and the last one of his, after his last big film, which was the A-Team, which was his last team up with Liam Neeson.
Yep.
It could have been the end of life as we know it for both of them. Liam Neeson was once upon a time a guy that was in films like Schindler's List and
Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Well, I think I traced his downfall to 1999. It was when he gave up.
Yeah. Well, let's remember that he wasn't Darkman before that as well. So
that's, you know, true. Like, you know, he hasn't all been smooth sailing.
No, he's had a lot of ups and downs. He wasn't Nell after all.
That's true.
I'm shooting. You know, David, I'm completely shooting down your argument here, aren't I?
I had erased Nell from my mind. Nell. Anyway.
No.
I remember a very drunken conversation I had once at uni about Nell. And. We're all drunk and trying to do our Nell impersonations. But anyway, yeah, this film isn't going to revolutionize the way you think about Killer Wolf movies.
Did I have a particular opinion
about
Killer
Wolf? If you thought about them at all.
Okay, cool.
And it's certainly not the first time that man's gone against nature.
Yep.
But I don't know, there's kind of like a rawness to the grey that sort of takes you as much by surprise as the wolves in the film do, and it's kind of like, one of the things that I like about the film in particular is that when the wolves do attack, there's a suddenness to it, and it's quite visceral, and you don't expect it to come, and that kind of also one of the things that I noted when I was writing my review was that kind of scenery chewing Liam Neeson that we've had lately, the one who has a very particular set of skills, as we heard at the top of the show. He's been replaced with a kind of more contemplative Liam Neeson, a troubled soul, given to, you know.
Well, have you noticed there is actually an event in his life that really kind of set this in motion? He hasn't been the same actor since his wife died.
No, and look, you know, I don't like to try to bring people's personal lives
into
it. But
I think it did affect him, and she died so suddenly, and it wasn't like a long-term disease or something. She had an accident. She died, and I think it really affected him.
And look, you know, as I said, I don't like to make those comparisons, but I think in this case you're right. There has been a definite shift in his career since then.
He's taking on much moodier, much darker films it's almost like he's working out his internal demons on screen.
And this film is kind of like a slow ascent back, I think, for him, because it is still a movie where, like, you know, he's obviously killed everybody in Europe at this stage, so he's attacking animals now. But he's, you know, this film is certainly not for anybody who's afraid of flying. It's not for anyone who's not a dog person.
Hmm. No, yeah, exactly. If you're a dog person, don't watch this.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and I think, look, the movie has its flaws, and we'll get to those in a minute. But I think what Carnahan manages to do is he sort of maintains this tension throughout. Sometimes just the possibility of a wolf attack is enough to kind of keep you on edge. With those scenes where you hear the howling in the background, sometimes that's just genuinely frightening.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. There are some really, really effective moments in this film.
But there's a point in the film where it's all kind of, you almost kind of go, sorry, what film am I watching again here?
Mm-hmm.
And like the tree line, there's something very attractive about that tree line throughout the film. The tree line becomes like the kind of MacGuffin for this movie. Where they have to get the tree line. And I got to say, we'll get to it in a spoiler section. But
oh, I have so many spoilers I want to talk about. So yes,
there is a sequence where they're trying to climb a tree, basically, which is absurd. And it takes you into a completely different movie. Suddenly we've shifted from killer wolf horror film to cliffhanger.
Yes.
And it's things like that which don't sit well all the time. But I think it's still, for the most part, it's a fairly tense action film, and I quite liked it for a fair chunk of it. I don't think it's perfect, but it's definitely better than your average bear.
Okay, cool. My turn. No, look, I agree with a lot of what you said. I agree. It has moments. I think the film has some really, really effective moments. I think the overall, all of the actors are putting in good performances. I actually really like Liam Neeson in this.
He's good.
He has a monologue, which we'll talk a little bit about in spoilers, near the end of the film, which was, for me, incredibly effective. And we'll talk about more about that in spoilers when we get there. But I thought he was really good. I thought the way the film is shot is actually really nice. But can I just tell you, here's my overall opinion of this movie. It's bleak, it's cold, it's stormy, it's bleak, it's cold, it's blizzardy, it's bleak, it's cold, it's blizzardy, it's bleak, it's cold, it's wolves. All right?
Yeah.
So, and that's basically it. This is the bleakest, it's the feel-good film of the year. What can I tell you?
It's the bleakest wolf movie you'll ever see.
The title, The Grey, is so apt. I know it's supposed to
be. Normally I like all things grey.
It's supposed to be referring to the grey wolves, but no, it's grey. This movie is grey. Everything about this movie is grey. And there's just huge logic issues that I had with the film. Like this tree line that you talk about.
Yes.
You know, I was talking to my wife about it just actually before the show, and her, because, you know, they go trekking for the tree line. This is not really spoilers. It's just a minor spoiler here. But, you know, she said, why don't they hole up in the fuselage of the plane? That is much easier to barricade and protect themselves with. You know what I mean?
Well, there was some reason, didn't there? They came out with it at the start.
Because he said the trees look better. You know? He goes, they'll surround us and they'll wait us out or whatever it is. But you know what? The tree line wasn't much better. And
no.
All I can think is, you go to the tree line, there is no cover. You know what I mean? And so I sat there going, that's just huge. For the great white hunter that he is, you would barricade the best defense.
That's right.
And the best defense was a metal fuselage to a plane the wolves couldn't get in. You know what I mean? You put fire at the entrance and, you know, whatever. Anyway, that's a whole different film, I guess. You know what I mean? But I also had issues with the ending. I had issues with I found myself fidgeting in this movie. I found myself going, I want to like this film. I want to really get off on, you know, the wolves attacking. And I just found myself finding that it was all just a little bit ludicrous by the end.
Yeah, no, and I certainly, the last act of the film takes the film to places that I didn't expect or really want it to go.
I agree. And I think there's a certain point where I wanted it to go from being a grueling survival film, which is what it is for most. Well, actually, this film, the whole film, is a grueling survival film. And I wanted it to turn into an action adventure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it kind of does, but I didn't like that necessarily.
No, but see, it doesn't for me. That's the problem. It just remained grueling, gray, dark, blizzardy, walking, trudging. Storm, cold. The whole film's cold.
and look, I guess I agree with you, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and it certainly is not what you would expect from Joe Carnahan at the moment. But I liked a lot of what it was doing. I was disappointed by the ending, and I'm dying to talk about some of the spoilers. Should we open the vault?
We're gonna go in there in just a minute. Let's just wrap this up so that people who are listening who don't want the spoilers will get the rest of this form. Look, overall, I think that the reaction from the cinema that I was sitting in, I sat with a paying audience. All right, so I sat with a paying audience, and at the end of it, I kid you not, this was the reaction: what a fucking stupid movie. That's what we got. Like 15 people.
Really?
Yeah. There was not a... It was a Saturday night crowd, not a happy group.
Wow, that surprises me, actually.
Yeah. So I think that if you're really thinking about this movie, you might want to stick around for the spoilers, because there's a few issues with this film. I think the ending killed this film.
And I think, and also don't forget to stay until after the credits, because that's the real ending of the film, apparently.
Really? I didn't stay. What's at the end?
Oh, I'll talk about it in the spoiler section.
Oh, I didn't stay. I was so fed up by the ending, I left.
I saw it at a media screening, and the rep came out at least three. Well, they said it to us in email.
Oh, I wish I had known. Damn it.
and they sent out, and they came and told us before. They said, make sure you stay to the end of the credits, because there is an important bit
after
that.
See, and I always stay to the end of the credits, but I was so fed up. At the end, right. I was so fed up by the ending of this film, I went, screw it, I'm leaving. Yeah. My reaction was, nobody is. They're not going to put anything at the end of this, you know? Oh, man. All right. All right, so I'm going to say to you, look, quite frankly, I would say wait for a DVD.
I disagree. I think it's better than your average bear or wolf, as it were. I think there's a lot to like in there, but I agree with some of the points you've made, David. But I still think it's worth a look.
Okay, let's do some spoilers. So those who don't want to know the spoilers, the time code will be in the show notes, as always. And for those who do want to hear the spoilers, hit it, Richard.
Okay, I'm opening the spoiler vault now.
Cool, I like that one. All right, so from this point onwards until the doors close, we are in a spoiler zone. So if you're still listening and you don't want to hear spoilers, shame on you, leave now. All right, so fucking stupid ending of this movie. All right, so we trudge for 2 hours with these people and we are establishing him as the Great White Hunter. The poster, not the one that we're using in Australia, but the main poster, is the poster of him with the glass on the knuckles.
That's right.
And the knife in his hand. And in the trailer, you actually see him charging the wolf with the glass and the knife. And yet,
right.
In the film, nada. In the film, we have the heroic moment. He tapes his hands. He puts the glass. He smashes. He stares at the wolf. Black screen.
Now, and that's where the film ends before the credits. If you stay till after the credits, you don't get much more.
Oh, really?
Okay, what happens after the credits is you sit through these long-ass credits.
Yeah.
And then you just see a big black mass of a wolf lying on its side and Liam Neeson slowly breathing behind it, lying down there as well.
So basically and that's they killed it. Each other?
Well, it looks as though they either killed each other or he won. And he's now using the wolf for warmth or something.
What about the other wolves? There was like 15 of them in that den.
I don't know.
See, and this is what I hated about this ending was this, you kind of, and it follows on right after that speech, which is a great speech. When he comes out of the river, which he would have had hypothermia, mind you, but, you know,
yeah.
Somehow he is invincible.
He was warmed by his giant cock. had to mention the giant cock.
We did. For those who listened to Hollywood Babylon, you'll know what we're talking about. Liam Neeson is reported to have an enormous penis, the size of one of the large Avion bottles, apparently. So I don't know why. I don't know why he didn't just club the wolf to death with that. You know what I mean? But anyway, the point.
But we're swinging around until it performed a helicopter.
Fly out of there.
Lifted him out to the tree line. Yeah.
But the point is, he comes out of the river. He's the last person left. He's somehow avoided hypothermia because, you know, the blood rushing to his penis has kept him warm or something. But, you know, and he's standing there and he looks up into the sky and he gives this amazing monologue about basically saying, I've never had much time for you, God, but, you know, faith be damned. Prove it to me now. Prove to me you exist. Show me something. Do something. Help me. And then I love his line where he just turns around and goes, fuck you. I do it myself.
No, I do. That's a great switch. And you, even if the movie had ended there, that would be...
The thing is, what really frustrated me about the film is the fact that we've established him knowing about the wolves. We've established about him being a badass and everything. So we have that amazing speech. He basically says, fuck you, I'll do it myself. And then we have the standoff with the big alpha wolf. He does the glass bottles. He does the knife. And we don't even get to see it.
No, and even if you set it off the credits, you don't actually see what happens.
No, exactly. And that is so unsatisfying. And that made me so angry at this movie because it's like the payoff never came.
And but in some ways, it doesn't matter.
Well, I did. I wanted the payoff. I was waiting for the payoff. I was waiting the whole movie to have Liam Neeson do something. You know what I mean? And do something badass to justify all of his talking throughout.
Hey, man, it's not about the destination. It's the journey.
No, I wanted the fucking destination on this one. I'm sorry. The fact that they had made such a big deal about the glass bottles and the tape and the knife and we don't even get to see it. I waited a whole film for him to do that.
Well, yeah.
You know, and that's so it really frustrated me. That ending really frustrated me. All right, what else didn't you like? Oh, I've also got to say, really.
I
that whole cliffhanger scene that you were talking about just before.
Yeah, well, this is my thing, yeah.
All right, I just want to say, talk about your thing and then I'll talk about the ending of it because the ending is the part that I love.
Yeah, look, I found that whole sequence. Basically, they get to a point where they have to get across to these trees, so they strap a line across from the cliff's edge to these trees across the way, and they have to shimmy across one at a time. I found that this was a completely different movie.
Had a little bit of vertical limit in there with the guy jumping over. And then we had cliffhanger with them crawling over.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it all gets a bit odd after that.
Well, okay, David, the point I like about that, though, is I like the fact that the last guy going over, old Dermot Moroney there, goes over, he screws up, his foot gets caught, the zip. I love the fact that a zip undoes and the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, yeah.
And he falls, and he has this big old fall down all the trees and goes, boom, lays on the ground. And without a moment's hesitation, four wolves are already eating him.
Yeah.
And all I can think is, the wolves were up on the cliff. What were they? Were they abseiling?
There's wolves everywhere, man.
it's like they're going over there to get away from the wolves, and they're already down there. How the hell did they get down there so fast? And
you know that wolves can fly?
And I don't think wolves would go after the body that fast.
No, probably not.
I think they would circle it. They would wonder about it. They would, and there's other people moving in the trees. They would be worried about that. It's not animals. Don't just go like, you know. It's like they had a magnetic attraction.
Dude, have you been in Alaska running from wolves?
No, I'm
no,
afraid
you
I
haven't.
Haven't. No,
don't talk about things you don't know. Have you got a cock as big as Liam Neeson's?
No, unfortunately.
we might, for all we know, because it could be Hollywood legend.
It might be. That's true. And in fact, he's never actually bared it, so we don't know.
No, he doesn't have to. He looks fairly confident, though.
He does. But apparently Michael Fassbender gives him a run for his money.
Well, yes, in shame.
We'll talk about that another time. Yes. all right, but look, all right, anything else? I'm feeling kind of purged now, so I finally got that out of my system.
I'm feeling a bit claustrophobic in this vault. Should we get out?
Well, one more thing before we get out. Can I just say that I also had real trouble with the fact that they had established how cold it was.
Yes.
They did nothing but talk about how cold it was all the time. That one guy actually says it was so cold that I, you know, went to do a pee and icicles grew off my testicles, right? You know?
Yes.
I mean, we're talking cold. They're in an airplane and their breath is blowing out. You know what I mean? It's so cold. And yet, Liam Neeson, his face is exposed the entire film. Not a sign of frostbite.
Mm.
This man is invincible. And yet, we didn't get to see him fight the wolves.
That's right.
I mean? It's like very, very frustrating.
He's the Chuck Norris of wolf films.
But he has a very particular set of skills.
Skills.
All right, get us out of this vault, Richard.
All right, I'll open the door.
All right, we're back and no more spoilers for The Grey. Whew, I needed that purge, though.
It's warm in there.
All right. Boy, this rain is just coming down. I wonder if everybody can hear that on the mics. It's just pouring. Okay, moving right along in this show, we've got our famous list of five.
Yes.
And this week we are doing five great body parts in movies. That's what it was.
That's right.
Five great body parts in movies.
Inspired by Liam Neeson's enormous penis.
And Michael Fassbender's enormous penis.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. So we thought it's time to actually list some of our favorite, or what we think are the great body parts exposed in movies.
And David, if you get the order of the numbering messed up this week, I'll be disappointed.
Josh still hasn't come online, has he? No, I will.
Well, let's give a pause for Josh's.
All right, okay.
For each
so we'll start with Josh. Josh?
Yeah, it's a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. All right, no, my number five, I'll start us off, and I'm going to say Brian's penis. Brian's penis in Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Of course.
Absolutely. That scene is a classic scene, started with him throwing the windows open and hanging it in the wind.
Yep.
So, Graham Chapman, good for you. Richard, well done. You're number five.
My number five is Sharon Stone's vagina.
A little higher on my list, actually. In fact, I'll talk about it right now because it's actually my next one.
Okay.
So well, it's my number four and your number five.
Sharon's vajayjay.
Sharon Stone's vagina, Basic Instinct, the famous leg crossing scene.
Yeah.
Which, funnily enough, unless you're watching it on the big screen, you really can't see anything.
Yeah, well, that's true. But how about on Blu-ray? Have we tried that?
I haven't seen it on Blu-ray, but I imagine even that, because it's even hard to see on the big screen.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is there. And what I thought was most amazing about that was actually all the controversy that came afterwards with Sharon Stone basically saying that she didn't know Paul Verhoeven was doing that shot, and she got very mad at him. Well, she wasn't wearing underwear, and she crossed her legs.
Yeah.
And she knew where the camera was.
Yeah, well, exactly right. So she knew what she was doing.
So I don't believe her.
But it's been forever immortalized in on film and in Hollywood legend.
Absolutely. You're number four.
My number four. Well, it's Edward Scissorhands' Scissorhands.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, or unless you're watching the porn version, in which case it would be Edward Scissorhands' Penis Hands.
That's true. Edward Penis Hands. That's right.
But yeah, no, look, it was one actually suggested to me by my lovely girlfriend, Susan, the Scissorhands version.
Right, right, of course.
Was, and because it's one of her favorite films of all time, and they were such a integral part to the film, and his quest to get real boy hands was such an endearing quest. But the Scissorhands actually formed such a integral, well, you know, apart from being in the title, functional as well.
Can I just say, though, that it's kind of a downer, though, because I thought here we were being 12-year-olds going, penis, and you threw in something real.
Yeah.
You're such a grown-up.
I know. But I've got another penis coming up.
Oh, excellent. All right, well, in that case, I'll move on to my number three. Because my number four... Oh, no, my number four was Sharon Stone's vagina.
That's right.
You just did your number four, right?
That's right.
My number three. My number three is Jerry O'Connell's...
You're still getting the numbers mixed up.
Oh, I got confused because we did the Basic Instinct thing where we joined...
Josh, what was your number four?
Oh, great one. Very good.
Yes. Excellent. I hadn't thought of that at all.
Excellent. My number three is Jerry O'Connell's floating penis from Piranha 3D.
Yes! Oh, I'd so forgotten about it. That's brilliant.
I thought that was a last minute addition to my list, actually. I remember that.
That's
and I
great.
Went, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when the piranha comes and basically belches it out.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an exceptional piece of filmmaking. What can I tell
you? Are we ever going to get Piranha 3DD?
It hasn't come out yet in the States yet, has it?
No, it kept getting pushed back, though. It had a release.
It will come out. I was listening to an interview with, what's his name? The guy who plays the younger scientist in it, who at the end gets taken by the piranha.
Right, yeah.
Apparently he's back for the sequel.
Okay.
I don't know how that happened. But anyway, and he was saying that he's done his shooting already. So it's been shot.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll wait and see.
There was a trailer.
Sorry? There was a trailer. Absolutely. So, you know, it'll show up at some stage. All right. So you're number three.
Number three is a penis, although I'm not entirely sure if it's a real one. It's one of those things they say that in a film where you're spoken about in the first act, you turn up in the second act and die in the third act. It's the perfect role. Well, this doesn't. This film, the penis is spoken about a lot in the first and second acts, and you only see it in the very end of the third act.
I know what you're talking about.
And it's sort of, we're not entirely sure whether it's not a real one. It's definitely a prosthetic one. It's Dirk Diggler's penis from Boogie Nights.
Absolutely, which of course was a roughly drawn character of John Holmes.
That's right.
Yeah, who had an enormous penis. I think it was something like 12 inches or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Mm,
it was pretty big.
That's big, is it?
It was pretty big. Well, oh, really?
12 inches is big.
Well, not in Liam Neeson's language, but you know.
Liam Neeson's, I think, a third leg, from my understanding. Yeah,
that's my understanding. Yeah. Okay, no, that's good. That's good. I actually did think about that at one point. And there's so many people who thought that was real.
Yes.
At first. And now, of course, it's been proven that it's not, and it is a prosthetic. And in fact, I think Mark Wahlberg actually has that prosthetic in his house somewhere. I don't know what he does.
What he uses it for, we may never know.
I don't think we ever want to know.
To beat M. Night Shyamalan for The Happening.
My number two is a penis again. Got a lot of penises on my list.
You're obsessed, man.
I am a bit obsessed, but Jason Segel's penis in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, of course.
Not once, but twice.
I've met him.
Did you meet his penis, though?
I didn't meet his penis, but the second I walked into the hotel room, he offered, he said, do you want to do this interview here or in bed?
Wow.
Yeah. And I said, well, what would you feel more comfortable with? And then he just offered me a cup of tea and we kept going.
So. And he didn't pull out his penis. So he had a very large penis.
Oh.
That was a very large penis. Too.
And off the back of that, he got the Muppets gig.
I know. Amazing, huh?
Because you could operate three puppets at once, presumably.
Well, there is that movie Puppetry of the Penis, remember? All right, you're number two. Oh, my God, we're going to hell for this list. All right, you're number two.
I haven't got any more penises, so just be great.
I have no more penises either, I must say.
Although my next one involves cunnilingus. But anyway, it's Dr. Carl Gale's head in Reanimator.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes, when it goes down between the legs of what's her name?
That's right. He uses his own head. Well, obviously, you normally would, but he detaches his head and he's carrying it around and it talks. It's on a platter. Then he uses it to go down on what's her name.
And now, what was her name again? She was hot and she was in all of those films of that era.
I have to look this up.
No, it's coming to me. It's coming to me. It's coming to me. Barbara Crampton.
Ah, Barbara Crampton.
That's her name. She was also in From Beyond and a bunch of other films of that era. Yeah. She was hot.
She was hot, and I really loved that film. I haven't watched it in a while, but it sort of came to me as soon as I started thinking of body parts. My mind instantly went to horror movies and started thinking of severed body parts.
We could have just about used Barbara Crampton's pubic bush in that.
Which was in
great exposure for most of that scene.
The head was more memorable.
That's true. I think it was.
It talks, it moves, it's great in bed, apparently.
Gives great head.
It's good head.
All right, my last body part is actually two body parts. It comes in a pair, and it would have to be Halle Berry's breasts in Swordfish.
Nice, the Berry twins.
Worth the price of admission to that movie for that 1 30-second scene.
Yes,
and then you could just about leave.
Pretty much. I mean, I had a few. I'll get to my number one in a second, but a few of my runners up would have included some twins.
Mm-hmm.
The Hathaway twins.
Oh, I forgot about her. No, I was actually thinking Hathaway twins in Love and Other Drugs.
Yes, that's right. So, well, they've been out a few times.
And in what was that, Havoc? That other movie she made.
Yeah.
She's actually exposed herself quite. She went through that phase where she was exposing herself a lot because she was trying to get away from the Princess Diaries.
That's right.
Stigma.
Oh, yeah. So go on.
Anyway, go on. You were telling me about your runners-up.
Oh, sorry. No, that's all I can think of. I wanted to add Katherine Heigl today after seeing One for the Money.
Well, I didn't actually think she would ever do a nude scene.
She's covered. Well, she's not covered. She's got a hand over her nipples, basically, but it's otherwise fully nude.
Because I was actually one of the criticisms I had about the movie she did with.
Knocked Up.
Yeah, that's the one. Was the fact that she did all her sex scenes with a bra on, which for me is incredibly unrealistic.
And we saw the birth, didn't we?
I think we did, didn't we?
But it was a stunt cunt, presumably.
Now, nobody has uttered that word on this show since Mirren was on the show. I can't believe you went there.
You can bleep it out if you want.
No, I'll leave it in there. We carry an explicit tag. I think our audience has been waiting for that.
I've been waiting. How many episodes have I been on that time?
Is that the first time you've ever uttered that?
I think it is, actually.
I've said it a few times. All right. So you're number one. You going to tell me?
My number one is Ash's hand from Evil Dead 2.
Oh, yeah. If you're not going to... Give
back my hand.
If you're not going to go smutty like me, then yes, that is definitely super high on the list.
It was actually the first one I thought of when I started putting this list together.
That is an amazing pick.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love it. It's one of my favorite scenes in any movie.
And if you haven't seen Evil Dead 2, let me just say to the viewing audience out there, if you haven't seen Evil Dead 2, it is a brilliant piece of performance from Bruce Campbell when he does that kitchen scene. And he's smashing the plates on his head and he's throwing himself around. It is an amazing piece.
It's a one-man Three Stooges.
It is. It's staggering. And you just watch it going, wow, that is just stunning how you did all that. It's fantastic, you know?
And it was so funny. My late grandmother, who passed away last year, actually said, would always say to me, it was actually one of her favorite films. And she discovered it later in her life. And which was one of the awesome things about my grandmother. But she always said, I'll put on that movie with the farewell to arms scene. And I love that. So it was like the scene when the hand's crawling away, he pins it down with the farewell to arms.
That's right.
And she loves it. She loved that. And she used to go walking around quoting, give me back my boomstick. Which
and groovy.
Groovy. How awesome is that for a grandmother?
That's a great grandmother. Ah, that's fantastic.
But so, like, you know, I've got a special place for Evil Dead 2 for that as well.
That film, though. I mean, I remember going to see that film at the cinema, and we'd had very little sleep, and my friend Ralph and I went to see it, and we laughed so hard we literally slid off our chairs, and I mean, quite literally, we were on the floor by the end of the film. It was hysterically funny. And I remember when it came out on VHS, I was actually working in a video store at the time, and it was Halloween night, and we were bored, and you know, it's what you do when you're in a video store, you kind of break the rules. And we weren't allowed to play R-rated films in the store, of course, because, you know, that's just not right. But we said, stuff it, and we put on Evil Dead 2 just because we wanted to watch that scene. And within 10 minutes, all of our copies had gone out. We had people just standing, everybody just stopped in the store and were just staring at the screen. You know, and then all the copies went out, and we just went, that's the power of that film. It appeals. Once people actually know what it's actually about, it's not a horror film, you know?
No, and I think it's probably the perfect, of all of Sam Raimi's Evil Dead films, of the three of them, it's the one that's the most perfect. And even though it kind of, the opening is weird because it kind of retells the first film.
Well, it's basically a remake of the first one.
It remakes the first film with a different number of people.
Yeah, and in fact, the running joke was in three films, his girlfriend is played by three different actresses.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
He retells the first film three different times in three different ways.
That's right.
Yeah, so none of them actually have continuity to each other.
No, but if you lop off those retellings, you can actually run all three films together as one single film.
Except for the fact it's got different girlfriends.
So he's got different girlfriends. No, if you lop off that, because if you lop off the two retellings in two and three,
oh, I see.
You don't get the two girlfriends. If you just lop off the first 10 minutes of part two and three, you actually get this movie where he goes up to the woods, gets stuck in his cabin, has his thing. It's still beleaguered by the Evil Dead, and then gets thrown back in time.
Absolutely.
It's actually because, like, you know, the end of the second one, he gets thrown back in time, and they kind of redo that opening bit a little bit as
all right,
well.
Now, spoilers for a film that is 20 years old, but I need to ask you, I need to know where you stand. Mm. Which ending are you?
For the third one?
Yeah. Are you the smart ending or are you the time travel ending?
The S-smart ending.
You're the S-smart ending? Okay.
Yeah, because I think that's keeping in more with the Evil Dead.
I don't know. There's something about the cave ending that just tickles me.
I do like the cave ending because I do like...
Because I wanted to see that movie.
I like the idea of a fourth Evil Dead film set in the future.
That's right. That's the film I want to see now. So.
But I really like the S-Mart ending where it's... because it's got the whole, lady, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave the store. And the whole shop smart, shop S-smart. And,
I love Evil Dead 3.
He sort of grabs the woman, hugs the shotgun, is like, hail to the king, baby.
I love Evil Dead 3 just for that one line where he goes, yo, she bitch.
Let's dance.
Let's dance. Yeah.
Like Evil Dead 3, Army of Darkness, has probably got all the classic lines that people remember because most of them ended up in Duke Nukem.
Absolutely.
I'll always think the second one for me was probably the one that got the balance of horror comedy just right.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think Evil Dead 2 is a masterpiece.
Hmm.
And the fact that they want to go and do things like remake Evil Dead, which leads me to believe that they'll probably try and remake Evil Dead 2, just doesn't work for me. Leave it alone. Hmm. You know, Evil Dead 2 is the remake, and it's perfect. You
exactly
know?
Right.
And leave it alone now. Anyway, we should probably get out of here. That's probably a show.
Sounds like one.
I think it does. How can people find out more about you, Richard?
They can head up my website. Well, I'm going to start that sentence again. They can head up my website. At therealbits.com, that's therelbits.com, or they can hit me up on Twitter, DVDBits.
Fantastic. And Josh, how can people find out more about you on the internet?
Give us all your money.
I see. Okay.
Really? You charge for your website?
You can find out more about Josh when he's around at rawdlc.com. That's if he actually ever makes it back from New Zealand. Or at, oh, here we go again, hiphopnetonline.com. Is that
you got
right?
It that time.
Hey, there you go. So you can find out more about Josh by hitting up those two websites. Find out more about me by going to geekactually.com, or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Don't forget Behind the Panels and the competition that we're running at the moment. You can send feedback to this show, sending your feedback to film at filmactually.com. Boy, you know, you work without
dude,
a net.
Dude, it's your website.
You work without a net, man. This is what happens. All right. Film at filmactually.com, or leave us a voicemail, city number 0280113167. Or if you are outside of Australia and don't want to call long distance, you can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word. Boy, it's getting late and I'm getting tired.
Sweet.
Oh.
No. Way.
Yeah, way. All right. So we're going to get out of here. We opened the show with a clip from Taken, as you may have guessed by now. We are going to be closing the show out with some of the score from The Grey, so I hope you enjoy that. Richard, what have you got planned this week? Anything to do?
Film-wise, I think with you, I'll be seeing Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close tomorrow
I'm
night.
I'm really looking forward to that. I don't know why, but I really am.
Some of the other films, I know, I've got a few offers tomorrow night, but it was the one that tickled me the most, mainly because it's nominated for Best Picture.
Yep.
I'm seeing other films like Crazy, Carnage, and A Dangerous Method, so I'll have plenty to report on when I come back for the next episode.
Yeah, and all going well, I should be at two more of those with you as well,
yay!
Which would be Like Crazy and A Dangerous Method. So I'm still waiting for confirmations on some of these. So, but I'm supposed to be at all of these. That one made me jump. But we're going to get out of here because it's late and this is a show. And we're done and we miss Josh.
Bye, Josh.
Bye, Josh. All of you out there, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all again next week. Bye, Richard.
Bye, David.
Good night, future boy.
Bye, everybody.